If you'd like to know more about the plants mentioned on this episode, visit our Instagram page at Plants People Places Podcast or our Facebook page and just search for Plants People and Places Podcast. Welcome to Plants, People and Places, the podcast in which we speak with plants people and find out what special connection they have with their plants. In this episode, we speak with great friend and all-round plants person and owner of the Botanical Jungle Garden in Dorset, Mike Clifford. Welcome to the podcast, Mike. First of all, for people who don't know you, I mean, people must not be on social media if they don't know you. can you tell us a bit about yourself, please, and also where you live and what your garden is like, the soil and everything?
Yeah, okay. Right, so I'm Mike Clifford. I'm a collector and propagator of rare exotic plants. I have a botanical-themed garden in Dorset, in Poole in Dorset. It's a mixture of many different varieties of plants. I don't specialise in any plants particularly. I like to have this botanical mix of plants in the garden.
So how did you get into growing all these plants and getting that plant bug?
Well, I started very young. I started as a young boy. My father gave me a part of the garden that I grew vegetables in, and my granddad was actually a gardener. He was a chauffeur and gardener, lived in a big house in Boscombe, and he was like the head gardener. I used to go gardening with him at weekends, pruning roses and helping him tidy up. And I've always liked growing plants and propagating plants and growing stuff from seed. I suppose that's where it all started.
It's not really been your career, actually, has it, for a long time?
Well, actually, I started life as a cabinet maker joiner for 11 years of my life. And unfortunately, during the recession, that shut down. So I went into the caravan industry, mobile homes. So I've been in that industry for over 35 years.
Wow.
So it's not a stressful job, but it's a long hours and quite hard. So gardening and propagation and my plants have been the thing that I come home to and forget work, get into my jeans and start gardening. So that's what I love doing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you could fool anyone, I think, because if anyone follows you on social media, they'll see all the growing you do. And I really don't understand how you find the time. I mean, at the moment, I know you're doing it full time, the gardening. But when you were still in the caravan business, yeah, it was non-stop, really, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, I'd come straight home from work. Summer, I'm a bit of a summer gardener, winter propagator, summer gardener. I'd like to get the garden out, all the plants out in the garden, come home, water, and basically be propagating and growing stuff from seed most of the year. That's my passion, I suppose.
Yeah.
The garden's a secondary thing to the actual what I love to do. I like to grow plants, share them with people, and open our garden up for charity. We've been doing that for quite a few years now, and share my passion with other people.
You certainly do that, because I've visited your garden many times. It's on the front of my book, and I think probably about 75% of the pictures in my book are also from your garden. So a really good one, actually. if you look back, so can you remember at all, like, at some point that you found a plant and that sort of gave you the bug, or was it a gradual thing because of your grandfather? Was there anything that really got you going into, well, what you now have, really quite a jungle style?
Yes, yeah. I think when me and Tina first got married, I built the house. I did a self-build, so I built my own house, and we had quite a large garden. It was quite thin but quite long, about 100 foot long, and we decided to grow heathers and conifers. Mm-hmm. So we have a local nursery close to us. It was called Heatherlands, a fantastic nursery, been on Gardener's World and everything. And we used to go there every weekend, and I had about five a spare a week, and we used to go and buy £5 worth of heathers. And the gentleman there was a fantastic old guy. He'd come out of a tray of plants every week that were a bit tatty, and he'd say, take these home and look after them. And I had 300 varieties of heathers and conifers. Yeah, they're all labelled, all named. So I still like this botanical theme. So I'd always label every plant with the family name, the common name, and what it was. And I think it was gardening program called Real Gardens, probably about 20 years ago, that we saw Will Giles with his exotic garden. And I watched that program, watched a couple of his episodes, and then decided that's it, I want to grow tropical plants. And we literally took every heather and conifer out of the garden. And we lived in a cul-de-sac, and I took a blue tarpaulin out, put all the plants out on the tarpaulin, knocked on everyone's doors. So they all came and took all the plants, but they put them in their front garden so we could still see them. So I still saw my plants. But then we started doing jungle type garden. And it's evolved over the years. Now it's not so much normal jungle type plants. I try and grow things other people don't grow. So it's slightly rarer.
And what kind of soil are you gardening on?
So we're currently gardening on heavy clay, which
Well,
is totally different from my last house, which was sand. So the range of plants I can grow here is totally different to what I could grow at our last property. You know, I can't grow echinaceae, they just rot out in the ground, and certain plants the roots just rot. But other things, banana plants and Araliaceae seem to do quite well, even though they don't like soggy roots, but they grow really well in my garden. So heavy clay.
What about temperatures? What is your minimum you get to?
Well, we've had -8. I think that's probably the worst. And even through Beast of the East, it actually wasn't that cold. It was just the snow. So on average, we get sort of between -3 and -5 each year. So it's quite warm there.
We're even milder down here in Kent, of course. It's well, parts of Kent at least. But I know you overwinter quite a lot of plants in your plant board as well, which isn't heated, is it?
No, that's not heated at all. So I would say probably at least 40% of my garden is tender. And with a lot of those plants, I plunge plant them into the garden each year and dig them up and stick them. We've got a carport, we call it the plant port, because it's full up with plants, always is full up with plants. And it's not heated at all. So they just sit out there, and that gets down to -1. I think it's the lowest temperature that's seen out there. And there's some very tender plants that sit out there, but for very short periods of time when it gets down that cold. And we don't lose much.
No, that's good. And it's amazing that you can overwinter things like that as well. It's really good. It's very difficult because you grow hundreds, well, maybe even thousands of plants, of course, and have done over your lifetime as well. But are there any favorites that you have?
I've got quite a few favourites with lots of memories of different people. I suppose my favourite plant I have with the nicest memory is one I got from Hill House Nursery in Lanscove in Devon, from Ray Hubbard. Ray Hubbard was the owner. He sadly passed now, and his son Matthew runs it. But I used to go there, and Ray was always very accommodating and helpful with tips how to grow things. And I'd mentioned the fact that I'd killed three begonia luxuriances, bringing them in the house in the winter. And he said, "Well, you can't be without begonia luxuriance." And he went out the back and he came back with a 3-foot-high begonia luxuriance. He said, "There you go." He said, "Don't put it in your house. Keep it somewhere cool over winter and take cuttings." And he showed me how to take the cuttings, because the begonia luxuriance is a massive begonia. It's the same plant. So I've had it so many years now, and it's grown. And there's been hundreds and hundreds of people who have had bits of that plant that Ray gave me, which is really nice. So it's still the same plant. And I cut it down. I've literally cut it down yesterday to 7 foot so that it can go into the plant port for winter. And that's all I say. And it was this year. It's this year. It got absolutely. It was nearly 12 foot tall, and it was nearly 6 foot wide this year in a pot. And he sort of showed me how to grow it from cuttings.
Yeah, they are amazing plants, aren't they? We've got one at work and it's actually in flower at the moment. And if you look really closely, it does have this tiny begonia-like flower, but it's mainly the leaves, aren't they? They're just so beautiful. Almost, it's a bit like a
Huge.
palm, but these long fingers of leaves and yeah, beautiful thing. And the red stems as well. I think, yeah, that's definitely one of my favorite begonias, at least.
I think it's the biggest begonia I grow, the tallest for certain. It
Yeah, it
gets
must
absolutely,
be.
considering it comes from Brazilian rainforest as well. It's
Oh,
quite
really?
amazing. Yeah, you can keep it just frost free over winter, and you get a little bit of die back on it, but it always comes back and always looks better the next year.
Yeah, no, they're amazing plants, and as you say, they're quite good to overwinter as cuttings even, and on either a glass of water, or I've had some in the hydro pod as well, and they grew quite quickly as well. So, yeah, lovely plant. Any other favourites then? You're allowed a few, so.
Well, that's good. I've got quite a lot. I have two favourite places that I visit. One is Abbotsbury, and the other is RHS Wisley. And I was very lucky enough to be introduced to Matthew Pottage probably about 7 years ago. He was on gardeners. He'd just done the exotic garden at Wisley,
Oh,
and a
yeah.
week later, I was on Gardener's World with my garden, and I was told to contact him because he would love some of my plants. So I sent him up a big parcel full of seeds of exotic plants, many of which are still grown in the exotic garden there today. But every year after that, I've been back and donated plants to Wisley because the plants I grow are so specialist and so tropical that I can't grow them here. I can grow them for a year or so, and then they get too big.
Yes.
So I've given them giant lobelias, Lobelia fistulosa, the
Right,
Brazilian
how tall
lobelia.
does that get?
That gets to about 4 meters, and it got to
Wow.
about 4 meters and flowered in the glasshouse there. Big, lovely, big purple spiral flower at the top. And the other
Nice.
one was Lobelia bambusetti, which gets to probably 5 meters and probably about 3 meters across. And again, they grew it by the waterfall area, and it
Oh,
got
yeah.
absolutely enormous,
Right.
massive leaves. And then recently, in the last 3 years, Matthew Pottage messaged me and said he saw me growing Cecropia and
Oh, yes.
Masanga, and he sort of sent me a message, please could you save me some seedlings? So I think I took down six plants about 3 foot high. They're now probably hitting the roof at Wisley, and they're absolutely enormous. The Cecropia is an umbrella plant, and has some massive big palmate leaves, humongous leaves. They're absolutely stunning. It's a real feature of the glasshouse still. So I'm quite proud of that one there.
Yeah,
It's
oh, that's
a
an amazing one.
beautiful,
Yeah, I've seen it. It's beautiful.
beautiful plant. And recently I donated something else that was actually, they didn't ask for it. It was actually the Eden Project that asked me for it. And it was a Werklia ferox,
Oh,
which is a
yes.
hibiscus family, big spiny leaves. Huge spiny leaves, and I took three cuttings down to the Eden Project, and I took a couple of cuttings to Wisley, and I went back a few weeks ago, and the plant's now about 5 foot tall, massive
Oh,
leaves, and
wow.
looking absolutely stunning. So I'm really pleased that's grown well for them.
Oh, yeah, they are
But
amazing. I did have one at one point, but it didn't survive one of the winters. I think it might have been too wet or something. But it's those big, beautiful round leaves, aren't they? With all the spikes almost on it, aren't they? These little, well, almost like a begonia ferox, I suppose, as well, isn't
it,
it?
like a begonia, I always tell people it reminds me of the Amazonian water lily. It's very
Oh,
similar to
yes.
that as well. Yeah.
Now, wonderful
And
plants.
then,
Well, I think that's some good favourites there already. And of course,
yeah.
if anyone would like to see images of these plants, then Mike has actually already sent me quite a list of pictures. So they will be on our social media page, Instagram, and at Plants People in Places podcast. You mentioned already that, well, the Begonia luxuriance, for instance, you had a good memory of that because it's also the person who gave that to you. But what plant has also always had a special memory for you because of who gave it to you or where you got it from, for instance?
I have a very special plant that a friend of mine sadly passed away about 3 years ago now, quite a young age, and he was sent a cutting of a very special Vireo rhododendron. It's
Oh,
an
yes.
epiphyte, and I had the unhappy task of sorting out his tropical greenhouse and giving all the plants to people that would appreciate them. So they all went to specialist growers, and what was left was a couple of sticks. And I took this stick back, put it in, it had one leaf on it, grew it on, and then found out it was a Varroa rhododendron. Put it in the proper mix, managed to get it to flower, and there's only two of these plants in cultivation in the world, one in Sydney Botanical Gardens and one in my greenhouse. And I
One
managed
in
to get it
pool.
one in pool. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm still struggling to propagate it. It's a very difficult plant to take cuttings. I've tried three times and failed so far, but the plant itself is still going well, and that's a very special plant to me. And if they do ever recognize what it is, or that it's actually going to be dedicated to him and to the person that collected it.
Yeah,
So
no, it's
that's a
amazing.
very special plant.
Yeah. And so rare, but obviously the person behind it as well. But yeah, to get some sticks and then it into something
Exactly,
that,
yeah.
sorry. So yeah, you must have been a great plants person who had an eye for rarities then.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. No, he was. He was a fantastic plantsman. Grew a lot of Nepenthes and rare ferns, and he was my
Nice.
fern guru.
Yeah.
So sadly missed.
Going on to a completely different subject, really, of course, plant related, but we've talked about quite a lot of your favorite plants and plants that had special meaning for you. But is there also some plant that you actually really do not like and you would never even grow and you take a wide berth when you see it in a garden center or nursery?
Yeah, I'm probably going to be disliked for this one, but it's probably snowdrops. It's one of those
Mike.
plants galanthus. Yeah, there's something about no, I can't do snowdrops. I can't do daffodils, snowdrops, or any of those. But I don't mind South African bulbs. I've got some fantastic ones of those. But no, that's probably something I've never had in my garden. But hey, everybody changes, and my choice of plants has changed vastly over the years. I've got collections, little collections of plants, and you never know. So I never say never, but at the moment, probably snowdrops. I can't see the difference between them all.
No, I do get what you mean, actually. I do like snowdrops. We're actually starting a national collection of Greatorex snowdrops at Walmer. So
Oh,
don't come
are
over in February, March.
Wow.
But I have got quite a collection of snowdrops there. I think we've got about 85 different ones. But for me,
Wow.
it is always the thing that I do really want to be able to see the difference between the two. So I'm not really going
Yeah.
for, oh, that green spot is slightly different than the other green spot. And one person who's given me loads of snowdrops is Ross from the old Picton Garden, or old called nursery, Helen Picton Garden, sorry, or the old called nursery. And they've got a huge list of snowdrops, and he loves Aspidistra, so quite often we do swap
Oh,
seeds.
wow.
That's how I got most of mine, actually. But so I can't say I completely agree with you not liking snowdrops, but I do see your
No.
point regarding the difference between them.
There's not many plants I dislike, and I probably wouldn't. There's probably no plants I dislike. It's probably just one I haven't got space for in my garden. There are certain plants that just don't do. Dahlias don't do well in my garden. They get mildew. It's too jungly. There's not enough sunlight for them, and I've tried them, and they just get full of mildew all the time. And roses, another one. I don't do roses. I don't do cottage garden, basically. It's strange. Although it's a botanical garden, I'd call it a botanical garden. And there are a lot of collections of plants. So I have to be quite choosy in what I put in there. And
Of
it has
course.
to earn its place. It's a quite a relatively small garden, and it has to earn its place in the garden. It's got to be something that's going to catch people's eyes.
Of course, your garden as well, because of what it is, it probably peaks sort of, well, from July onwards. Yeah, you need that season, of course, to have everything at its fullest. And yeah, I can see that you need to have space for plants as well, of course, to in the limited space you have, although you always say that, but I
Yeah.
think my garden is a quarter of the size of yours.
Your garden's absolutely, you know. So yeah, yes. Yeah, you do an amazing job in
No, but I
yours.
do get that. It's yeah, things do need to earn their spot, really, because otherwise there's something nice that you could put in there.
Absolutely. Now, I'm always on the lookout for new plants to grow, and it's the trouble with me is it's usually plants that are too big, or I can't actually give them what they need in my garden. I mentioned Abbotsbury. I grew Dendrosaurus, three species of Dendrosaurus. They're all at Abbotsbury. They're all doing well. Dendrosaurus literalis is from the Juan Fernandez Islands. Quite a rare plant. big orange daisy-like flowers. They got theirs to about 8 foot, multi-branched and full of flowers. Fantastic. They can just grow. There's Sean Bost there, who's the head propagator, and he grew it on in the glass houses and that. And I just couldn't. I haven't got the space to be able to grow them that big and to get them to flower in size. So it's nice to donate to these institutions that I can actually go along and see my plant 6 years later flowering.
Yes, yeah, where they've got the space, yeah, definitely. And I have been on the receiving end of those donations as well, so really good, thank you. So when we're looking at your gardening experience and everything, have you got any horticultural heroes or a hero that has really influenced you?
I suppose it has to be Will Giles, although unfortunately, I never got to meet the great man himself.
Yeah.
I did visit because without him, I think I'd still be growing heathers and conifers. I
Same for
don't
me,
think I'd.
actually. Maybe not headers and
Yeah.
conifers, but yeah, he was the
Yeah.
person who influenced me most.
It was that TV program, Real Gardens, where you were watching him. And he did little videos as well, which I watched many, many times. And a fantastic book, one of the first books to talk about tropical plants. I think I waited nearly a year for that book to come out. And yeah, so I suppose he would be my all-time hero. And it's just a shame I never got to meet him. I actually went up the week before he passed. And he was actually in the house, but too ill to come out to see me. He knew I was coming. He actually sent a message to me via a friend to say that he was ever so sorry he couldn't come out. Really regrets it. And but yeah, fantastic garden. I'm glad I got to see his garden because obviously now it's closed up. But yeah, so he would be the one I'd put at the top of my hero list.
Yeah, I think I've got a very similar experience actually, although I didn't meet him either, but he wasn't expecting me either. But I think I went about 2 weeks before he passed away, unfortunately. So and as you say, the garden was shut after that, and it has really, really inspired me. And someone who also went, I knew who went along with us, he actually took quite a lot of pictures and he's a very good photographer. So that's why his garden features in my book. And it's only because
Yeah.
I knew someone had been there. And it's such a great shame because I think part of it is even built over now. It's housing estate
Oh, no.
part of it. So it's awful. Yeah, such a shame. And yes, those gardens were in Norwich, of course, the Norwich Exotic Gardens. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Mike. It's been really good to speak to you again, and very nice to chat about plants as always. And
Brilliant.
I do hope to see you soon. And of course, next year you're opening your garden again. Where would people find out about that?
So that would be on my Instagram, Facebook, and X. I think it's X, not Twitter now, isn't it? So it's Mike Clifford, Mike's Rare at Mike's Rare Plants, and I always post on there any events I'm doing or any plant fairs or anything up there.
Excellent.
So our open days will always be posted on that.
Yeah, and of course you can also find Mike's details on our own Instagram page. We will tag Mike in there so you can always click through there and find him like that. Thank you very much and speak to you soon.